welcome to the Criterion Quest, a continuing podcast series looking at important classics and contemporary films. I'm Chris, and sitting on the couch next to me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Tom.
Hello.
And we just finished up watching the 1970 documentary, Gimme Shelter, directed by David Maisel, Albert Maisel, and Charlotte Zerwin.
Yes, and what a fucking tremendous trip it was.
Yeah, it is a interesting, bizarre ordeal of a film. I'd say that with the highest possible praise.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's a tough film to watch.
Yeah.
Probably because you can see murder on screen.
Not murder. We'll get into that later.
All right, fine.
But what the
man was killed.
Yeah. What the film, the documentary is, it is a, it's a documentary that kind of tells the story about the famous free concert at the Altamont Speedway in December of 1969. And we're kind of given a little bit of a preamble that's the lead up, the last kind of 10 days of the Rolling Stones tour leading up to, and then finally, the last 40 minutes really is the Altamont Speedway Festival and the absolute and utter clusterfuck that was.
Hmm. I found that it was kind of jarring because you know going into it, mainly because I think the opening sequence is essentially like the radio presenter
describing
what's happened.
Yeah, it's recording of a radio show the day after or a few days after the concert and, discussing what had happened and having people call in. And one of the people that calls is Sonny Braga, one of the heads of the Hells Angels.
Yeah, and the Stones are listening in, so you know straight from the get-go what's happened.
Yeah.
And then from there it cuts back and you get to watch the shows leading up to, the free concert. And it felt really strange because they're Stone songs and they're fun songs and you kind of want to party, but in the back of your mind you know the culmination is going to be complete and utter violence.
Yes, yeah.
So it's this odd resistance to enjoying the music while you're watching the film at the beginning.
Yeah, it's that interesting thing of it's a slow burn. It's like watching a horror movie, I guess, in the sense that something's gonna happen to these teens in that cabin.
It's teasing the monster.
Yeah, and
that's right.
I suppose that opening kind of pre-credit sequence with the introduction of with the radio interview is like that first kill, and we eventually go through and this movie does turn into a horror film.
That's a good comparison, I find. Like, it flows like a horror film does. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned just before, like, the radio interview and kind of, right from the get-go, this opening scene, you kind of know what you're getting. I think it would have been intriguing to see this movie back when it first came out, which was 1970, with the actual incident happening in December of 1969, and it being a big fucking deal. People were taken to trial for murder, and like, interestingly enough, this footage was used to help acquit the Hell's Angel of murder, which we'll get there.
But it is a sensational event.
Yes,
because it means much more than just an accidental killing.
No, the whole thing is a giant. You can read as a
it's like
giant.
The end of the 60s.
Yeah, it is
quite. Quite literally, but
yeah. Well, I mean, in many ways. despite the fact that it was in first week of December in 1969, but people do consider the horribleness that was this concert to be the nail in the coffin that was the ideals of the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Like the general idea of what Michael Lang and the people putting on the concert wanted to do is genuinely a decent enough idea, and trying to kind of push forward the ideals and the values of what the 60s tried to represent.
Yeah.
And just the fact that it failed so miserably is just...
Yeah.
The thing that killed it, I guess.
You mean, it was never going to work, because as soon as you have a free concert, you're going to have people that are going to rock up just because they want to start fights, because it's fun for them.
The fact that they had 300,000 people show up means that it was just an untenable situation.
You need
that
paywall to stop assholes coming in.
Yeah, that was it. And especially in hearing the Hell's Angels were there, it's like, yeah, let's go fuck with them. Like, let's, without thinking of the consequences, and it just was being brutal. But it's interesting, the idea of what they were trying to do, and it's almost like serendipitous that it went so south so quickly.
Mm.
Yeah. And, like, I was intrigued watching the doco as it got to that point, like, how the Maisel brothers, like, behind the scenes with the cameras, because it's like they had been filming the Stones in lead up to this concert, and then when they get to the concert and it ends up being that, whether or not they were behind the cameras just going like, oh my god, this is like these poor people, or if they were behind the camera going, jackpot! Yeah,
I'm gonna make the best documentary ever.
yeah. And then
they're pretty professional because
they are amazing documentary filmmakers.
I mean, it's pretty turbulent
to yeah.
be kicking around. I mean, especially, I mean, I'm surprised the artist didn't give up sooner as well.
Yeah, well, apparently, the band that was supposed to be going on right before the Rolling Stones, like the second headline act, was the Grateful Dead. Mm. And when they found out about what was happening, all the violence that was going on during the day, they were like, fuck you, we're not going on, we're not performing, and they just left.
Yeah, good for them.
Yeah.
But do you think that potentially, I mean, they were lucky that they just didn't come on.
Yeah.
But what do you think would happen if any of the artists started and then openly just said, this is bullshit, we're leaving.
We're walking off. I think
what's
it would...
the percentage of like an actual riot occurring?
Yeah, I think given the situation of what was happening, I think like from the footage, like it's kind of hard to say that having not obviously been there, but looking at the footage, what it appeared to be to me was a band would start playing, people would start getting into it and start moving around and dancing and kind of the bit of push and shove that happens when you're in up the front in the mosh of a concert. And I think people from both sides, the Hells Angels and the spectators, were kind of clashing over that. And like the idea of maybe the Hells Angels kind of being like, whoa, calm down. And the people were like, man, I'm just trying to party. And then that escalates into the fight. I don't think, it was necessarily. So I think if they stopped altogether, I don't know if it would escalate into full violence because they don't have anything to. Yeah.
It's too hard. It's hard to say. But then, at the very least, the artists would be terrified of that happening.
Yeah,
and it would be they would be terrified of having it being on them.
Exactly.
But so I think, you just wouldn't do it.
I think the majority of the people that were down the front, because that is a, like you said, 300,000 people, like a fucking massive crowd, to be so dedicated, to be there so early, to be down at the front, actually putting up with all that was going on, means that you're a person that is hopefully dedicated to the music and actually there to see the acts and not wanting to fuck shit up.
Yeah.
Theoretically.
But there were kind of like, in theory.
Yeah.
Then as soon as you kind of have heaps of LSD, for example.
Yeah, that I think is the problem. There were too many fucking loose units there. Yeah. Like, holy crap.
Loose.
Yeah. That was like one thing, a question I kind of wrote down. Like, I'm intrigued. Like, you and I have both been to a shitload of festivals and a lot of concerts. Like, I mean, 2 weeks ago, we were at the Meredith Music Festival. Fucking wonderful, wonderful festival.
Yeah.
Happiness, love, everyone having a great time.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, how many drugs would you have to be on to be in the crowd and be like, I want to be on that stage? Because so many people at this concert seem to be...
But that's, I guess, what you do back in those days. Nowadays, you like...
It's interesting as well. There was no barrier.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess it was a thing where it was easier to get up onto the stage. But rather than just kind of partying and having a good time all on their own, there were the individuals who were like, I need to be on the stage. Which was odd to me.
It seems to me like it's like that Beatles kind of mania thing where you have to touch them.
You need to be
as opposed to just rocking out.
Yeah. But
so
it
might be, this is my answer.
Yeah.
My answer is that the people that are at the front are not there for the music, they're there for Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
And they're there to touch the flesh that is a holy rock god.
Yeah.
So they kind of, that's why I assume they're running up and
trying to get on stage.
Crazy.
And
They're not interested in dancing, they're interested in touching what they can presume to be a god.
Yeah. And I can, you know, give the benefit of the doubt to the people that are on way too much acid that they are getting on the stage as a means to get the fuck out of the crowd, possibly. Of just like,
it's the easiest way to get out of the crowd.
Yeah, it's to get on stage because
somebody will carry you out.
Yeah,
it's
much.
It's really easy to do.
Kind of forcibly, but yeah.
That's fine, as long as you don't get fucking hit and pull cue.
Yeah, that was what in terms of the documentary style, that was what was really interesting, that we're given that half-hour kind of preamble's not the right word for it, but the build-up of seeing all their concerts that went off perfectly, and they're having a great time, Mick's a hell of a performer, the crowds are loving it, and it's fun.
Well, you need to know what they're... like, why people are going to see them.
Yeah.
That's a great show.
And you're like, this is really wonderful. And then is that fucking stark realize, like, you know, when they get there and it is, you see footage of people getting bashed in the head with pool cues and you hear the fucking pop when it hits and it's
and even
horrifying.
Yeah, and even, like, Mick getting hit in the back of the head as soon as he arrives, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a different kind of festival straight away. And it's, I mean, it seems to be just the fact that you remove the paywall.
Yeah. One thing I was intrigued by, I was talking before about all the absolute loose units, the people that are just on another plane. Like, the great example is, like, right during Sympathy for the Devil, Under My Thumb, like, right before the incident happens, it lingers on this one guy who's off on the side of the stage who's just grabbing his jacket, like, like, he's just... gone.
Yeah, he's snapped and he's something very angry for some reason.
What I would give anything to hear an interview with that guy, mainly for, like, I'm sure he does not remember what was happening that evening.
Or his memories are just too alternate to what actually happened to him.
And he, a year later, there's a documentary about the person. He's like, cool, I'll go see that. Maybe I'm in it. Oh my god. Yeah.
That's not me. I wasn't there.
That's just a coincidence that Dad kind of looks like me. Like,
Dad, or twin.
Or that girl, who's off her head, like totally naked, just naked bashing those other two girls in the front row.
Well, I think she wanted to touch the rock gods.
Yeah, but like, what would be the experience of going to the cinema to watch this documentary and being like, oh god.
Yeah, it's like you have children now and they're
watch you as the loosest...
behaving like a fucking ape.
Yeah, primitive ape. Yeah. That's the problem with the idea, I guess, is that if there's no paywall to ensure that it's the people that want to be there.
Actual fans.
Yeah. And it's also the idea of no actual security.
Yeah.
That causes people to just assume and... It's Caligula. It's the worst. It's the worst of humanity. It's people pushing it to their extremes.
Yeah, classic Woodstock clusterfuck scenario.
Yeah, but at least Woodstock, no one died that I know of, at least. And you know, that was just a clusterfuck because they just didn't have the facilities ready. Mm. This was a clusterfuck because they didn't learn. Yeah, they did not learn from their mistakes at Woodstock and just enhanced upon them and made them worse.
I mean, it's one thing to kind of not set up preventative measures, which is a gap between the front line of the audience and the artist performing.
Yeah.
Because nowadays you will have a barrier.
That's the 1.5-2 meter gap or whatever, yeah.
But then the worst fault is just not hiring professional security guards to deal. I mean, like, nowadays... you would go, and if it's a hot day, they'll just kind of squirt you down with a hose, and it's awesome.
Hand out free bowls of water.
Yeah, you know, they're there for your safety, as opposed to, like, it felt like the Hell's Angels were there
to maintain order.
Yeah, they're there to make sure that no one is acting up at all.
It seems like no
against
one
against the artists.
It seemed like no one actually told the Hell's Angels what their actual role was.
Yeah, it wasn't clearly defined.
Yeah, in as much as, like, in that opening scene in the radio interview with Sonny, he's sitting there told, like, I was given a free case of beer and told I could hear the music if I sat on the stage and made sure no one fucked with the artists. No one told him about...
that's the job. Like, that's what I mean. They've
yeah,
been
that's
told
not
to,
what security
to,
is.
To stop people fucking with the artists as opposed to keep the audience controlled and safe.
And safe. Yes, exactly. Which
so,
is...
that's what... that's whoever told them... whoever outlined their job sucks
whoever,
ass.
Yeah, wrote that memo.
Who's that? Who's the guy there? Michael Long?
Michael Lang was one of the concert organizers, probably the most famous of them. He was the guy that was one of the people that put together Woodstock and... Yeah.
So, yeah, what else? What other points do we have? I've covered that. We've covered all my points, actually.
Trying to think, like, kind of filmically how... like... this could have very easily, and the way that it establishes, the way that it kind of starts off, you start to think you might be watching a concert movie, because it says musical performance, occasional backstage footage, musical performance,
But you know the culmination because it told you at the beginning, yeah. So you're awaiting this building tension.
But with, you hadn't seen this before, right. When, as the film kind of built momentum, when it got to Altamont, did you expect it to just be performance footage or be what it actually is, which is the majority of behind the scenes, like what actually happened? And we only get maybe two or three performances, really.
Oh, I expected behind the scenes because if this is considered one of the best documentaries, how could it be a good documentary if you don't get, you know, footage of Mick Jagger watching the footage?
Yeah.
And watching what, how like, because he kind of broke as well. That was one of like the hardest parts to watch, is like watching him deal with the consequences of something that was, that should have, he's a part of, but not necessarily in control of.
I think it's really effective as well, like on that note of him, the fact that they kind of cut back and forth to the actual footage they shot to showing the Stones the footage they shot.
Mm-hmm.
Once we get to Altamont, we don't cut back to the editing room until the incident happens.
Yeah.
I think it's a really brilliant editing move in that the incident happens and then the footage kind of freezes and we hear a voiceover that is Mick saying, can you roll back on that? And then we cut back to the editing room. We've had like a 40-minute, nearly an hour gap where we get
you're getting to experience that day.
Yeah.
And then without any interruptions, and then which is a good choice to do.
Yeah, and then when the incident happens is when you get the realization of like, oh shit, now this is happening as well. Mm. And we kind of are treated to that almost second narrative of the film.
Yeah.
Really effective.
Yeah, it's almost like we want to draw it out at this point.
Yeah.
Talking about, almost like we want to discuss, it's hard to know, it's difficult to ascertain how the Stones actually reacted.
Yeah.
They clearly feel ashamed.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it's kind of difficult to actually really try and pin down what they've experienced.
Yeah, because they, well, I think shame
is, it's shock, right?
Yeah, it's a shocking shock. And I think it's that opening footage of them listening to the people calling into the radio show and talking, having that discussion about what happened, and they're just sitting there silent with, like, not looking up. They're kind of all looking down to the ground at their feet, and it's shame. And it's kind of also highlighted in the fact that they did not tour for 2-3 years after this happened. They just kind of, like, we fucked up so bad that we can't tour. Like, we need to...
They definitely felt responsible on some level.
Yeah, we need to rethink what has just happened.
Because
do you think it's fair to say that they fucked up?
No one's pointing the finger and saying because of you someone died, but they're a part of this tapestry that is
they a free festival. They produced that festival.
They're the headlining act. You know, no, people came to see them.
I can understand they would feel terribly guilty about what happened, but I don't think it's fair to say that they fucked up.
Okay, fair enough.
They didn't organize the event.
Yeah.
They it wasn't Mick Jagger, which is a little annoying. Sorry, I'm just totally butting in.
That's okay.
But I overheard
the
response from the Hell's Angels having a go directly at Mick Jagger.
Yeah,
yeah.
Something tells me it wasn't Mick Jagger personally.
No.
Who laid out the security regime for this festival?
No, we've already established whoever did that is the guy who fucked up. That does the guy who didn't do his job.
It's very, very sad as well that the whole thing is attributed to Rolling Stones, because they were the ones on stage at the time, which is like, you would feel so guilty.
Yeah, it's hard to...
It's like...
But I'm just saying that they would blame themselves on some level.
They absolutely
even if
would.
They're not... They're not the ones obviously stabbing the guy, but...
You know what it's like? It's like those poor train conductors, the train drivers, when people throw themselves in front of trains. Like, there's nothing they can do about that, but they've got to live with that forever, and that's kind of what's happened here.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah.
Fair call.
Thanks.
Thank you, Cole. I don't know. This is an interesting one because I mean, we could keep talking about the ins and outs of what actually happened, or we could go into, I guess, the film discuss. It's a hard one to discuss the actual film itself, because it is a fairly standard. It's hard to dissect documentary in terms of filmic technique, I guess.
Yeah, I think the way I treat documentaries in terms of building a good documentary and whether it works or not is simply that if you're jumping around and forcing emotions on me, then it's not working. But if I'm falling into moments of various emotions naturally because you've just edited and paced it so well,
you've created a narrative.
Yeah. And then that's a great documentary. And so this one, I mean, because I watched that Big Bird one.
Oh yeah, I am Big Bird.
And I felt that was jumping around from moment to moment.
Yep.
From like year to year.
There was no cohesiveness.
I was just like, my emotions were just getting torn from one portion of my entity to the other.
Yeah.
And it was just an abrasive experience.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I wanted that documentary to be something that it wasn't.
The pacing was just good. Off, right?
Yeah.
And so the content could have been amazing, but it just didn't feel good to watch it, right?
Yeah.
Whereas this one, the content is fascinating, brutal, but also the pacing.
Tough to watch.
Yeah. But the pacing is great. You know, that is an hour and a half film, but it just fucking went like that.
Yeah. Would you have preferred less of a preamble and more focus on the actual incident? Or do you think that it was the way that they did it, it worked nicely?
I don't know. Like, maybe you could have jumped into the actual event a little bit earlier, but it's like kind of nitpicky, you know?
What about backstory, kind of fallout? I suppose there wasn't that much at that point of when this was made, but
yeah, you couldn't do it in 1970 because it's almost like you want to do a retrospective at this point.
Yeah, and be like, this is the incident, this is what happened, and then actually a dissection of the fallout of what actually transpired. Because if you didn't know about Altamont and like what actually happened there, and you watch this documentary, you'd be like, oh, that just looked like a really shitty day.
Yeah,
and
it's bigger than just a one event. Like it's part of a whole decade.
Yes, yeah.
So
it would be very interesting. Maybe like a Gimme Shelter revisited.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the Maisels are still around and still making films. So
if there was another film and it was, if you did it in such a way that it didn't feel cheap and like cash grabby.
Yeah.
You could start off with the first half being that event, and then the second half being like and also maybe like putting it like feeding in bits from the 60s history. And then looking back at it, you know, kind of like mixing it all together and seeing like what were the repercussions over the last few decades. That'd be a cool film.
Yeah, interestingly, like that you point out the idea of like trying to make it not cash grabby. This film was accused of that actually when it first came out. Kind of
really
got very mixed reviews because people thought that the film was kind of trying to be a bit exploitive of what actually happened and like using the notoriety of that festival and in particular having footage of that person's death led it to be a little bit of an exploitation, which I don't agree with. I don't think.
Maybe,
I mean, they were making this documentary before this person got murdered. Like they were
when they freeze frame on various instances of the gun of the black guy having the gun, and then they freeze frame on the knife as it's being driven down into his neck.
Yeah,
I can see where that comment's coming from because it's like you don't need this.
You don't need
to fucking linger on those shots. You know you've seen it. You know fucking.
Which makes me wonder if that was them actually in the editing room and it was really Mick saying, can we slow it down, and wanting to freeze on that moment, which is then followed up by him being like, well, there it is, isn't it? And that's when he gets up and leaves.
Okay, see ya.
If that was actually how it played out in the editing room, that would have been great. But if it was just, we're going to freeze to really highlight this, that's
sensationalism.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hmm. It's like, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
But I do think that it's still rather distressing.
Yeah.
But it's distressing because fucking a person was killed.
Yeah. It's really interesting watching it. Because I think the third time I've seen this film. And
isn't there four people that died there?
Four people, yeah. I'll go into that in a second. I've got some facts about the actual concert. But it's interesting. This is the third or fourth time I've seen this now. And watching it, you can actually see the man, Meredith Hunter was the guy's name, the black guy in the green suit who died, you can see him, and there's actually one shot kind of just before the Stones go on stage where you see him, and the camera kind of, it's just, they were filming him just dancing and having a good time, but then there's an odd thing, like knowing where it goes and the fact that he has a gun on him, you can see him kind of adjusting his jacket and fixing something in his pocket. It's very interesting to, like,
yeah,
that's a repeat watch kind of pick up. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, no, our four people did end up.
Maybe we put a time code up.
I'll try and isolate it and try and find it and pop that up on Twitter. Hopefully, you'll be able to track it down.
I'll just create more work for you.
Yeah. it's fucking Christmas this week, goddammit. No. Yeah, but basically, so four people ended up dying, the most famous being Meredith Hunter, who was stabbed and beaten to death by the Hells Angels.
Yeah.
The other incidents, two people were killed by hit-and-run accidents by car, which is...
Jesus.
Not good, but kind of understandable, seeing the absolute... like, early on, at the beginning, one of the organizers said, like, they've just parked wherever, they haven't parked in the parking lots, they've just pulled in and parked wherever, but I think we should let it go. It would be a fun kind of experiment, is what the guy says.
But what else
and
do you
two
do?
Fucking, yeah.
Because they don't have the staff to deal with it. They're so fucking
underprepared.
Under-resourced.
Yeah. But, yeah, so two people died from hit-and-run car accidents.
Pretty failed experiment.
Yeah, and one other person drowned in an irrigation canal.
And did they check their blood alcohol /LSD?
Yeah, I don't know.
Wow, that's fucking brutal.
But, in addition to the four deaths, four births happened.
Okay, so it's kind of like evened out.
Comically evened out. But as well as countless numbers of injuries.
But like...
heaps of cars were stolen and abandoned at the place and...
No, but stop, because there's births at that fucking festival.
Yeah, that confused me when the first one happens. It's like, a lady just gave birth, so she's being helicoptered out.
Yeah, and I was like, Jesus Christ, there's a birth. But now you're saying there's four births.
Yeah.
So, they were successful births.
I hope. Most
people are probably watching their parents in this movie right now.
Sheesh. I just hope that yeah. That's just... the mind boggles, the idea that you would go to this concert.
Yeah. As opposed to a hospital.
Yeah. Gotta see the Stones! Yeah.
Well, they didn't tour for a little while after that, so it's a good thing they
did. Yeah, good thing you got to see him while you did. But yeah, I guess while we're kind of continuing on this route, I guess we'll talk a little bit more about the actual festival. Yeah, so there was 300,000 people in attendance, which is a fucking sight to behold.
I don't even know what that number looks like.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a flowing sea of people. It's ridiculous. But yeah, the other acts that performed in the movie were Santana... Santana, Jefferson Airplane, who we see, where the
and
lead singer
gets as well.
Fucking knocked out by one of the Hells Angels, which is nuts. The Flying Burrito Brothers and Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Okay, cool.
Oh, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, sorry.
Yeah.
And yeah, the Grateful Dead were supposed to play, but were like, fuck this, we're out, and didn't go on and left.
Yes, I like those guys.
Yes.
More than just the music now.
Yeah. It was basically right after... I'm pretty sure that was them that we see the kind of candid footage where they're just like, this is a bummer, man. They left after hearing what had happened to Jefferson Airplane. And they were like, no deal.
No.
Yeah. But, yeah, so the young man that ended up being killed was Meredith Hunter, who... I'll just get a little bit of facts about him loaded up. Yeah, so he was an 18-year-old who was stabbed to death by the Hells Angels. So basically...
It's not funny, Chris.
I'm not... You're making me laugh. No. So he was an 18-year-old who was, you know, unfortunately stabbed to death. What happened was he pulled the revolver, and that's when, as we see in the movie. But because of the footage that was shown here, Hells Angels member Alan Pissarro was acquitted of murder, and it was deemed self-defense.
That's fair enough, man.
Yeah, but...
the guy had a gun.
So it's, I guess, one of those... I was going to say silver lining or good...
It's just like, fucking shame...
that people had to die for
this. Yeah, I mean, that's what, like, you know, all the Stones guys are just like, it's a shame.
Yeah,
the fuck do you do except never do a concert like that ever again?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Holy shit.
I don't know, is there... trying to think, like, where we go from here. Is there anything else you kind of want to address? It's a bit of a tough one, I guess.
It's kind of going to be a short one anyway because of the nature. It's a documentary about the Stones, you know.
I think you're right. So I guess, I don't know, I'm happy to move on to a little bit of trivia. Okay. You are as well.
Yeah.
So the Rolling Stones had gotten the idea of using the Hells Angels as security because they'd used the London chapter of the club as security during their free concert at Hyde Park that past July.
Okay.
So I'll take that back. Chris, edit that out.
Yeah. Now, so there was a free concert prior.
In Hyde Park.
And no one got killed.
No. Because so it says be here, because the British chapter is nowhere near as violent as their American counterparts.
Right.
So
it really does seem like the difference was simply that the Hells Angels American
was
faction.
Was it the same amount of people?
God, no. Not even close.
Well, that'll make a difference as well.
Yeah, that I think is a huge, huge factor. The fact that it's nearly 500,000 people were there. Mm. Like, it's an unmanageable amount of people, and it's that... It's that thing of, like, the more people you get, the larger the percentage of dickheadery exists.
And they knew the numbers.
Yeah.
So why would you be like, all right, it can't happen because it's just not fucking safe.
Yeah, that was the point.
Why is the city not coming down and going, like, we can't let you do it?
Yeah, or because it was on the outskirts of San Francisco. It's not actually in San Francisco.
Oh, so the cops aren't allowed on the outskirts of
Yeah, no, there should have been a thing where there was, like, at least people from the venue being like, we're at capacity. Like, shut the gates. Like, you know, only so many people can climb the fences without being busted. So, yeah. They will... We should have been advisors.
You were doing it. You saved lives.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So we kind of went into this a little bit early, but after viewing the footage of the stabbing of Meredith Hunter, police identified Alan Passaro, a local Hells Angels, as the man who did the stabbing, arrested him and charged him with murder. At his trial, however, a closer examination of the footage showed that Hunter had pulled a gun before Passaro pulled his knife. Passaro was acquitted on the grounds of self-defense.
He was.
Coincidentally, the Grateful Dead also used the Hells Angels as security at several of their concerts. However, the Angels that were at Altamont were later revealed to be neophytes, and hardly any leaders were present at the actual show.
What's a neophyte?
Kind of lower level, just like...
Like the grunts or
something. Yeah, pretty much. So none of the actual...
So they had no leader, they're doing what the fuck they feel like.
Pretty much.
Man.
Nope.
Good on you, Mick Jagger.
Yeah. Contrary to popular belief, Meredith Hunter was not killed during the performance of Sympathy for the Devil. He was actually stabbed just as the Rolling Stones started the first verse of Under My Thumb. The version of Under My Thumb that appears in the film was actually played after the killing, with the stabbing moved to the end of the second version of the song. Watching that, it kind of happens towards the end of the song. It's like, huh.
Yeah, because you need to have documentary flow.
Hmm. Besides Ike and Tina Turner, the other opening acts on the Rolling Stones tour was B.B. King, who does not appear in this film and did not perform at that festival.
Yeah, because he's classy.
Yeah. In the original version, played to theatre audiences, Mick Jagger used foul language on two or three occasions, appropriate for the moment, but later censored out for TV broadcast with a guitar strum sound overdubbed to block the offending words. Only early copies of the film contain the original uncensored dialogue. Criterion is obviously the uncensored version.
Great. Yeah, it's a good addition.
And the last little bit of trivia that I thought was kind of fun is, according to Albert Maysles, in 1999 when he was visiting UCLA and giving a few talks at their film school, George Lucas was one of the cameramen on the shoot.
Holy fucking shitballs, really.
Unfortunately, his camera jammed after shooting about 100 feet of film that night. All of his footage was later deemed unacceptable and wasn't used in any any of it in the film.
When his camera jammed for the prequels of Star Wars, right?
Mm. But looking at the end credits, he is credited as a camera operator in the end credits. And weirdly as well, Walter Murch, the famous editor and sound designer, is credited as one of the sound operators.
Highly coincidental.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they were both San Francisco filmmakers, part of the Francis Ford Coppola kind of troupe, American Zoetrope, and
mm-hmm.
yeah, so
all these fucking fancy words that I don't know. I'm sorry.
Francis Ford Coppola created an indie film company in the late '60s, early '70s, called American Zoetrope. That was his own studio.
Okay,
and it was like the renegades of new American cinema, and it had George Lucas, Walter Murch, John Milius, a bunch of cool people.
Okay,
yeah.
The more you know.
Yeah, but it's kind of fun to see George Lucas even fucked up back then. That'd be so harsh on that poor,
hating on that guy.
Poor, poor man.
Everyone's hating
He's
on that guy now.
So goddamn much.
Poor guy.
Yeah, I just wanted to have fun.
Just a little bit more rocks.
Just some more rocks.
Just some more rocks.
Ah, oh, George.
Just a few more rocks.
Cole does a really good George Lucas impersonation. But yeah, I mean, I think I'm good. I don't have really much else for this one.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, so I guess we'll move on to the actual Criterion edition itself. It is still in print as a one-disc DVD or a one-disc Blu-ray through Criterion. The DVD actually having more special features than the Blu-ray, coincidentally, in this case.
What?
Yeah. The special features include a breathtaking new transfer. Fuck that. I'm not going to say that. They include never-before-seen performances of the Rolling Stones at Madison Square Garden in 1969, performing a bunch of their songs, as well as backstage footage.
Breathtaking new transfer. It's breathtaking.
That's what it says. Breathtaking
it new It does transfer. Say that, yes.
audio commentary by directors Albert Maisel, Charlotte Zwerwin, and collaborator Stanley Goldstein. Excerpts from the KSAN Radio Altamont wrap-up, recorded on December 7th, 1969, with new introduction by then-DJ Stefan Ponek. Altamont Still Gallery, featuring the works of renowned photographers Bill Owen and Beth Sunflower. The Rolling Stones, Altamont, and Gimme Shelter, a 44-page booklet with essays by Jagger's former assistant Georgia Bergman, musical writers Michael Lydon and Stanley Booth, ex-Oakland Hells Angels chapter leader Sonny Barger, and film critics Amy Talbin and Godfrey Cheshire.
It's a thick book.
Yes, it is. As well as original and re-release trailers for Gimme Shelter, as well as a gallery of trailers for other Maisel's films, such as Grey Gardens and Salesman, which we will get to later in the collection. It is a fucking loaded edition. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, so, if you have any comments or queries or think we've missed anything, or think that you've got any ways that this concert could have been organized better, please send us an email at thecriterionquest@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter @CriterionQuest. But yeah, I guess that'll wrap us up for this week's episode looking at the documentary Gimme Shelter. Tune in again next week when we're back with another kind of a music-based one when we look at the Beastie Boys video anthology.
Oh, that'll be our 100th episode as well.
Our 100th episode.
What do you think about doing... we might do something special for that.
Mm.
And we'll kind of... What do you say we try and muster up some what-ifs, our picks for what should be but isn't in the collection?
Yeah, no, that could be fun. And maybe try and get a few of our past guests on as well or something. Yeah, we'll...
Yeah, if we can be fucked.
Yeah. It's the holidays. We'll try and work out some schedules. But, yeah, stay tuned. We'll try and do something kind of special for that one. But for this week's episode, I am Chris.
And I'm Tom. See you next time.